If you were to tell someone, say 150 years ago, that electrical energy could light cities and power new inventions beyond their wildest imaginations, like television and radio and computers, they would very likely think you insane. Yet apply the same kind of notions about the different types of energy that comprise the human being, similar to the advances in physics 100 years ago, and today you may get the same response. That, however, is changing. It changes most dramatically in the lives of people through the work of Solihin and Alicia Tom. They have dedicated a good portion of their lives to understanding what they call the life forces. They have seen imbalances in the natural hierarchy of life forces corrected in individuals, and the energy that is released goes into more noble pursuits than suffering. Today we welcome them to the program to talk about the life forces and other concepts they cover in their new book, Being Human, Exploring the Forces That Shape Us and Awaken an Inner Life. Just a delight to have you both on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Solihin, I imagine your background in cranial osteopathy lends credibility to a model of wellness that might be considered a little far out to those who are more used to drug surgery and radiation. So can you tell me about your medical background and how you began to shift towards a bigger model, if you will?
Yes, certainly. An osteopath is really the medicine of the physical body. In other words, that we as osteopaths look at the human body as a piece of machinery, sort of like a house, like a car, and that when all the bits are aligned properly, then your nervous system and your vascular system, and in fact all the sort of systems in that body then perform, you know, perfectly all right. The problem is that in ordinary life, our bodies don't perform very well, sometimes a bit like our cars. And so what happens is that people go to doctors and physicians and therapists to get them to fix up the body, to align it properly. Well, what happened with me was that I, as a cranial osteopath, which really means that I look at the body in a very fluid way, is that there was always a few people who really didn't get better. And I recognized that there was something missing in them that prevented them from understanding why they got sick. And actually, I turned that sort of inwardly and sort of looked at myself and realized that I, myself, wasn't very good at changing. And that I also didn't recognize why sometimes I got sick or dysfunctional. And so that sort of questioning prompted me to look at the body in a sort of slightly different way.
Doctor, heal thyself. Huh?
Indeed, yeah. Indeed.
You know, I did have I had an AC separation in my throwing hand, of all things, for a baseball player, not a good thing. I went to an osteopath, and it's my understanding that osteopaths are a little more holistic than your typical sort of surgeon or whatever. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's actually very accurate. Their training really is to look at the body as you say, as a whole, but their primary way to look at the body is really as a physical being.
A mechanistic approach.
But sort of recognizing that the sort of mechanism allows us to then function appropriately. I think the difficulty for me was that I started to recognize that this didn't really look at the sort of being of the person. It looked at us as a sort of mechanical object, but there was nothing inside that drove the mechanism. And so we started to notice that the body contained energies, or as we have said in our book, life forces, that in fact influenced us and affected our health.
We certainly want to cover all the life forces in this first interview. But first, I think we should talk about a map. In the book, it says that each person has a human map, the means by which we understand and make sense of our life. How would you describe that to someone who've never heard of something like that?
I think it's really just recognizing that each person has their own particular way of seeing the world and seeing their relationship to that world. And when we understand how that map is shaped, as in what culture we come from, what background we have, the family that we grow up, all our life experiences shape how we see the world. And sometimes our view of the world is limited by the experiences that we've had. And we can often benefit by expanding our map of the world to see it in a broader way.
Yeah, so there's a section in the book that says the old maps at a certain part of the world, and then beyond that, here be dragons or something like that. And it shows you the fear of the unknown.
Yes.
I'm getting a sense that through illness and other events, we get a chance to update our map. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. That really looking at everything is an opportunity to learn more about ourselves and more about the world, how and our place in the world, to see things, whether good or bad, as opportunities for growing our map in a way.
There are several examples that you give from your own personal life in the book. Is there one that you'd care to share to illustrate that?
Well, I think one that I used that sort of works to describe how this happened was growing up in England. When you see a world map, England and Europe are right in the middle of the map. And of course, because it's the center of the world. When you come to America, America is in the middle of the map. And as a child, somebody once mentioned something about Japan being very close to the west coast of America. And I thought, how is that possible? Because when you look at a map, Japan's on one side of the map and America is on the other one. And of course, when you look at it from the position of an American, with America in the middle, you can see that Japan is right off to the side. So where you stand, metaphorically, affects how you see your world.
Yeah, and there's an awakening there when you have that aha moment. A little one, yeah. Talking with Solaheen and Alicia Tom, they're co-authors of Being Human, Exploring the Life Forces That Shape Us and Awaken an Inner Life. Co-authored along with Alexandra Terhorst as well, so we should mention that. Tell us about how you each were introduced to the notion of the life forces. This goes back to a teacher of yours, I would imagine.
Yes. I think really for me, I was introduced it when I was, I lived in Kuwait and Afghanistan and Beirut when I was a child. I was very lucky. I had a very eclectic background, but also very conservative, actually, at one level. But what I started to recognize was that my what was around me influenced me very much. And I sort of noticed that where I was, that the people and the situation and the environment always affected me. So I started to look at the world not only at a sort of very pragmatic and realistic way, but also I began to see that there were unknown and unseen factors that affected my state, my feelings, my awareness. And so gradually came a sort of awakening of, you know, a spiritual life. And what happened was that I came across an organization that came out of Indonesia. There was I won't say a teacher, but a man who had an inner experience, the spirit of God. This man called Bapak Muhammad Sumu Haji Wijojo, which I always have great difficulty saying. And this organization, which actually is called Subud, is a worldwide organization that has a common way of worship, which is really surrender. And when we surrender to Almighty God and really allow the great life force to enter us, in a way we become alive and awakened inside, which then allows all our natures and all our unseen elements to become aligned, to become wide, to become flexible, to become really supportive of me as a human being in life.
Do you remember the aha moment you had when I'm picturing him describing this. I don't know, is it a workshop in someone's living room, or how did it happen exactly?
No, he in fact didn't do anything. It was really, I actually went to see some pals and talked to them about their relationship with this organization. One of them said, Subud is about the surrender to the power of God. Just simply that. And as that happened, I had this extraordinary experience of feeling as if I was 200 foot tall. It was as if something inside me grew up through the roof of the building that I was in and was extraordinarily tall. And yet, of course, I was sitting in a chair and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so at that moment, it was like my inner self said, yes, this is what you need to do.
There's a line of poetry by Michael McClure that goes, as I get huger, I become streams stretching into shadows of memories. You know, and I asked him, what do you mean you get huger? You know, and he said he described it as a different state of consciousness. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was like at that moment I touched the one.